If you have hyperthyroidism or Hashimoto's and are looking to save your thyroid, then you might want to take the 60-second Save My Thyroid quiz to find out how likely it is that you can save your thyroid. Upon completing the quiz, you will receive your thyroid saving score and a free report explaining your unique results, along with some things you can do to regain your health. To take the quiz, visit savemythyroid.com/quiz. Thank you for joining me on the Save My Thyroid podcast, where I help people save their thyroid and regain their health. My name is Dr. Eric Osansky, and if you have hyperthyroidism, including Graves' disease or toxic multinodular goiter, then you will especially benefit from these episodes. If you have Hashimoto's thyroiditis, you also need to save your thyroid, and therefore you will also find many of the episodes to be valuable, including this one, where I interview Divya Gupta, who is an expert when it comes to the gallbladder, and she also has a personal experience with Hashimoto's, and so she'll of course talk about the relationship between the thyroid and the gallbladder. As usual, make sure you listen to the post-episode chat after the outro music, as I'll expand on bilirubin, Gilbert syndrome, deficiencies of fat-soluble vitamins, problems with fish oil supplements, bitters, and preventing gallbladder surgery. And you can access the show notes by visiting savemythyroid.com/141. Anyway, here is my interview with Divya.
Welcome to the Save My Thyroid podcast, hosted by Dr. Eric Osansky. To stay up to date on the latest thyroid health-related topics, visit savemythyroid.com. The following discussion is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose or treat any disease. Please do not apply any of this information without first speaking with your doctor. Now let's head to the show.
So I am super excited to chat with Divya Gupta, who is a board-certified nutritionist and restorative wellness practitioner specializing in gut health, departed from her 15 years in corporate America to establish Divya Nutrition and Wellness. Faced with personal health challenges such as gallbladder removal and a Hashimoto's diagnosis, she became a wellness advocate, guiding ambitious professionals on a personalized journey to reclaim their health and live life on their terms. Her expertise reflects a departure from conventional approaches, emphasizing a holistic approach to well-being. Thank you so much for joining us, Divya. I'm very excited to chat about the gallbladder and bile metabolism.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Eric, for having me. And I'm looking forward to our conversation and our collaboration.
Same here. And so I gave a little sneak preview about your background, being that you had your gallbladder removed. So I'm guessing that's how your journey started. But maybe you could go into a little bit more detail how you decided, because not everybody who gets their gallbladder removed decides to help people with gallbladder issues. So what made you undergo that transition?
Absolutely. So I think a lot of us in this space, in the health space, either have dealt with our own health issues or have seen someone really close to us, someone we love, go through those challenges. In my case, it was both. So if I take a step back, I'm an Indian immigrant. This year will mark my 20th year in the United States. Gosh, I've been here for 2 decades. And I came here on a very stereotypical path. I did my computer science engineering back home and came here for my master's. I went to an Ivy League school, and then subsequently, the American dream, I got into corporate America. I was living in New York City for 8+ years, working for a top 4 consulting firm. But my health challenges started while I was still in India. I was in my final year of engineering when I started getting gallbladder attacks, which I didn't know at that point they were gallbladder attacks. And Dr. Eric, I don't remember a lot of things about when I was 20. It was 2 decades ago or more. I don't remember a lot, but can still close my eyes and picture myself back in my bedroom, up at night with pain, like 2, 3 a.m. pacing the room. And it kept happening every night. And I would just chalk it up to, oh, I ate something funny earlier that day, or it may be gas, because it's the abdomen area in general, stomach area. It kept on happening for a few nights, and the intensity of the pain would go up until I finally told my parents, okay, this has been happening. And they said, okay, wake us up next time if you're in pain. It happened again. I woke them up, and it just went on for a few weeks, and doctor visits, trying a different medication, but nothing really worked until one fine day I was in excruciating pain. It was horrendous, where I'm like, okay, let's go to the hospital at night. And we had a radiologist there who finally did an ultrasound and said, do you have gallstones? In one sense, I was relieved. At least I know what it is. But on the other sense, I had no idea what a gallbladder did at that point. I have no clue what's its function. The next step was seeing an endocrinologist, and the option given to me was, oh, we don't need a gallbladder, we can take it out. And perhaps that was the best decision for me at that point and for my life. So we decided to schedule that surgery, though I was in knee-deep into my exams and preparing for my GREs to come to the U.S. I had it scheduled, but life had other plans, where one night the pain was so intense. I was throwing up, and I've been through childbirth now, and I would still take childbirth over that pain any day. I don't wish that upon anyone. It was horrendous and nothing would help. It would, you just have to keep pacing the room. It was like stomach spasm as if there's some muscle twisting inside. And yeah, my gallbladder was taken out. Yes, it helped with the pain and everything was good. I felt good and life went on as planned. And now I came to the US. Now I've put in a new environment, more stress, new country for the first time, living away from my parents in a new country. And the food, of course, I was a vegetarian back then, eating a lot of higher carb, eating out a lot. And the portion size were huge too, that I slowly got used to accommodating. A few years down the road, like around 24, 25, I get a Hashimoto's diagnosis. Knowing what we know now and know that it's connected, but back then, nobody really looked into making that connection. And I was given our Synthroid medication by the doctor. And I think she spent 10 minutes with me and gave me two pamphlets. This is Graves, Hashimoto's. You have Hashimoto's. Here's your Synthroid, until we figured out my right dosage. And I was on my way. And for a lot of people, I know medication takes a while, but for me, it really worked. It actually helped me feel better. I didn't realize I was tired all the time. At 25-year-old, I needed a nap at the middle of the day if I could get it, or a pick-me-up for sure, and a lot of muscle aches. So it really helped with a lot of those symptoms. And you believe in your doctors, you trust your doctors, and that's the best decision and that's what I need to do. But for me, what really, I think, where I connected the dots that I need to look into more and lit the fire is my mom was going through a similar journey. So she had her gallbladder removed a few years before mine, but she never had any pain. So that's why we never could make the connection when I was having such active pain. She had a Hashimoto diagnosis. And now around my diagnosis of Hashimoto's, she got rheumatoid arthritis. I was watching a movie, and I'm like, if I don't make any changes, I'm following her path. And that's something I don't want to follow her path on, because I could see her life quality degrade. And her being in so much pain and the steroids she had to take to manage. And that's when I decided, okay, I need to take things into my own hand. I was dismissed by a few doctors when I would go in there for like muscle ache. I'm like, and they said, you're too young. It's in your head. And at that point, when you're so young and naive and didn't know how to advocate for myself, I thought maybe it was in my head because my muscles would hurt. And okay, I'm like, what can I do? What can I take in control of? That's when I started looking into nutrition and diet and lifestyle. And this is now 15, 16 years ago, we're talking about, there wasn't as much information available until you go looking for it. So I started looking up, I picked up a few health books, started changing my diet. I took out gluten and dairy for a week. And that's when I realized I had bloating. I'm like, we normalize feeling a certain way in our body. And until I took those food groups out, I felt lighter. I felt had more energy. And that I'm like, okay, there's more. This thing works. So I really got into start making changes into my diet, into my lifestyle, learned everything I could. And that's where my love and passion for health and wellness started. I would have never thought in a million years that I would do a 180 degree and switch careers, because I worked in a top four consulting firm, moved to Silicon Valley, where I was working in tech startups. But I knew there was more. I wanted to help people and not go through the journey I did of decades of trying to figure it out on my own and changing the diet. And nobody was talking about it. So that's when I decided to go back to school, get my nutrition degree, get both certified, get into restorative wellness, get certified with gut health as well. And it's been a few years where I decided to really focus on my practice full time and help as many people as I can, so they don't have to go through their parents' journey or go through what I did and spend decades figuring out what's going on. So they can start really living life on their terms, because that's my goal. No matter for how long I live, I want to be able to do the things I love and not be relied on medications for the rest of my life.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that story. So essentially, you had your gallbladder removed, and then years later, you developed Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And then you also suggested that the problem with the gallbladder might have been a potential cause for Hashimoto's, and then also potentially others as well. Can you talk a little bit about that connection? Because I think most listening to this definitely have that question, probably, since most people listening to this have a thyroid or autoimmune thyroid condition, but maybe didn't really think about that connection.
No, great question. So let's take a step back. So when we talk about a thyroid, for it to function properly, we need at least five of these organs to work properly and synergistically: your brain, your thyroid, your liver, your gut, and your adrenals. To answer your question, we'll take a deeper dive into the liver, gallbladder, and thyroid connection. So liver, as we know, is one of our most important organs. It does so much for us. It produces cholesterol. It produces bile, which is made of cholesterol and a lot more other raw materials. It processes our vitamin D. It detoxifies our blood. It gets the nutrients to where it needs to go. And again, so much more. All these organs, you think the thyroid sits in the base of your neck and your liver and gallbladder and your abdomen. How are these connected? So now when the bile, which is produced by the liver, is stored in the gallbladder. Now your gallbladder is a pear-shaped organ right below your liver. And the bile plays a huge role in breaking down your fat, breaking down the fat in your fatty meal, and to be able to digest the nutrients from those meals. It has a few more functions apart from, we'll get into that. So now the liver produces that and stores it into bile, into the gallbladder, and that really helps for it to get concentrated a lot more. So when we do eat a fatty meal, we have the adequate amount of bile present and the right quantity. So whenever we eat a fatty meal, it can squeeze out the bile that we can break it down. And now our thyroid. So one of the important functions of liver, I forgot to mention, is where our inactive thyroid hormone is also converted to the active form. So your T4 gets converted to T3. All your listeners have been on your podcast and know that thyroid plays such a critical role, I think, in every function of our body, from our digestion to our immune system to our energy to our metabolism, everything. And now we have around, 50 trillion cells or more? And each of these cells have a receptor for our thyroid hormone. And our gallbladder as well has a receptor for the thyroid hormone. So since thyroid really influences energy, people with Hashimoto's may feel fatigue and tired. That was definitely one of my symptoms, feeling tired. So when we eat a fatty meal, your gallbladder has to contract to squeeze out the bile. If you're low on your thyroid hormone, and again, you could be clinical too, Dr. Eric, it doesn't have to be outside of the range. You could be either end of higher or lower end of the range. You don't have enough of the active hormone, or the conversion isn't taking place. So your gallbladder gets a little, I'm going to say, lazy or not efficiently squeezing it out. So now what that does is also it backs up the bile and it accumulates, it stagnates, and then that could form gallstones as well. There is such a symbiotic relationship between these organs. You could have a thyroid issue and that could cause a liver and gallbladder issue. Vice versa, you could have a liver and gallbladder and that could cause a thyroid issue. Because when your thyroid hormone is low, it can also have an impact on your cholesterol production, which is a raw material for your bile. And your bile is made up of bile salts, bile acid, bilirubin, phospholipids, and water, so much more. It can have an impact on that. And a lot of Hashimoto's and autoimmune condition patients also have low motility as an issue. You could have constipation as well going on, and that could back up your system. The toxins go up, and it could be signaling. Again, there's a lot going on, signaling to liver, hey, we have too much bile, because bile needs to get excreted out, and also gets reabsorbed as well into our liver. So that could cause a miscommunication dysfunction as well. In my case, having the gallbladder was just the tip of the iceberg. And there was so much more underneath it that needed to be uncovered of why did the dysfunction happen. Yes, we can function without a gallbladder. I'm still here alive. But it does provide a function of concentrating the bile so it's present when we need it, so we can absorb the nutrients. And I think that's a question to ask. When the gallbladder dysregulated, what else is going on underneath the hood?
Yeah, no, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, I think it's important what you said. It's not a gallbladder problem. It's what's underlying. So similar to when someone has an autoimmune thyroid condition and they remove the thyroid, which again, there's a time and place for that. Just like there's a time and place for gallbladder surgery, which we could talk about a little bit later. But again, if someone has Graves' disease or Hashimoto's and they remove the thyroid, which is more common in Graves, but sometimes happens in Hashimoto's too, they're not addressing the immune system problem. And so the problem with the gallbladder is like you have a problem with the bile metabolism. Again, it's not the gallbladder itself. And then I like also what you said, that it could affect thyroid, and thyroid also could affect gallbladder. Yeah, you're right. Every thyroid hormone affects every cell tissue in the body. So if you don't have adequate thyroid hormone levels, that could affect the bile and leads to bile that is more sluggish. And then also if you have issues with liver and bile metabolism, that in turn could affect gallbladder. And I wonder, I don't know if you probably would never have the answer to that, but you had your Hashimoto's diagnosis, was it 5 years after the gallbladder removal or?
Yeah, 4 to 5 years between that period.
Yeah, maybe the underlying bile metabolism issue was a factor in development of Hashimoto's, but also with Hashimoto's, as it's sometimes it's underlying for many years. So for all you know, you might have had the Hashimoto's prior to the gallbladder problem, but it wasn't diagnosed until 5 years later. So you don't know what exactly causes what. But either way, it's all about addressing the root causes. If anybody has Hashimoto's, of course, you want to try to find, remove the triggers, heal the gut. And same thing, if someone has a gallbladder problem, you want to try to address any underlying imbalances in the liver, the bile metabolism. So yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. And I jumped the gun a little bit. I probably should have asked first, what are some of the more common like symptoms? Because you did mention some of your symptoms, like you said, I think you said nausea and vomiting and obviously pain. But what should someone look for, you know, when they're having a gallbladder problem or again, a bile metabolism problem?
Before I answer that, I was looking into some stats, right? So in the US, there are like 600,000 gallbladder removal surgeries performed every year. And 20 to 25 million people have a gallbladder issue or will have. And I went down the rabbit hole. I was curious about what happened in India. And they said 6% of India's population. So that's actually, I calculated 85 million people. So it's a problem that is happening a lot more. And yeah, people are not figuring it out and find out later. When I was having nausea and pain was much while I was still having the attacks, because I don't remember. Again, maybe I was having symptoms, I never paid attention. But if people are having gallbladder issue, I think some symptoms to look out for are the physical symptom is pain in your right abdomen, right under your liver. If you're feeling right side of your rib, you're feeling pain. And sometimes the pain could also go to your right shoulder. A lot of people could feel the pain in the right shoulder because they're connected. If you're getting bloated, especially after eating a fatty meal, because bloating is, again, can happen due to a lot of reasons. We could have food sensitivities, especially if there's an underlying autoimmune condition. We know with the leaky gut, and that could be SIBO. But especially after eating a fatty meal, do you feel bloated? The other is you could have stomach distension or you're burping a lot more. Bile contributes to the dark brown color of a stool. So if you start noticing clay-colored stool or darker urine, those are some signs, symptoms to pay attention that could indicate that there are some gallbladder or liver gallbladder dysfunction going on.
And when it comes to the foods, is it just unhealthy, greasy foods, or do people with gallbladder issues also have issues with coconut oil, avocados, other healthier types?
So in terms of what are causing these gallbladder issues, that could be several. One is our sad American diet, which is higher in processed food, the trans fat and low in fiber. What we have seen a rise in also are metabolic diseases, obesity and diabetes can also have an impact on your cholesterol production and so much more that could be causing the gallbladder issues. Genetics definitely play a role, but you and I know, Dr. Eric, we can have the genes, but what triggers it is our environment and lifestyle. And also we talked about thyroid could be one of the reasons as well. So in terms of from the food perspective, it's not the fat that's causing the issue, it is the bile. So it's more of the trans fat. I think people should still consume high quality fats from your avocados and from olive oil, but really focus on a high fiber diet because bile is also in this metabolism, it also helps to get rid of hormones and estrogen as well by binding to the fibers. Really focusing on a high fiber, more fruits and vegetables, lean protein, and on essential fats. Coconut oil, MCT, could be easier for your body to break it down because they are medium chain and not harder to break down. And also a lot of making sure staying hydrated as well. And with anything, you want to focus on the quality matters. Because when we talk about bile's role, one we know we're talking about is it helps in digesting and breaking down the fats so that the lipase can really do its magic. And yeah, but also the other role that the bile plays is getting rid of toxins and extra estrogen and helping us uptake of our fat soluble vitamins are A, D, E, and K. How many of us are on vitamin D supplements and the value isn't going up? Because if you don't have the bile, the underneath the bile to help synthesize and absorb these minerals, you can keep taking all the supplements and it doesn't work. And a lot of people will chalk it up to old age, you know, when your vitamin A is going down and your eyesight is getting weak, or your vitamin K is low, which helps in blood clotting, or vitamin E, which is one of our powerful antioxidant in our body as well. So bile role in it's not just to digest fat, but also with uptake of these fat-soluble vitamins and to excrete the estrogen and the hormones that we don't need. One of the analogies that I like to use is a soap dispenser, right? When we're trying to get grease out of our dishes, we want soap and we want it in the right quantity and thickness so it can actually take the grease out well. So that's why the bile is the gallbladder is so critical, is critical because it really concentrates the bile so that when we do eat a fatty food, it's able to really break it down and absorb it. The soap dispenser, we need to push it to get the right amount out is exactly why when if your gallbladder is not able to squeeze it out, your bile is there, it's in the right there, but it's not squeezing it out. It could also impact, hey, the bile is not getting out and causes the gallstones. I know I covered a lot in there.
Yeah, like you said, it covered a lot of different things. The fat-soluble vitamins, so that was interesting with all of them, but especially like you said, if someone's running a vitamin D test, and maybe they're taking 10,000 IUs of vitamin D because they had a deficiency and then they retest expecting the levels to be a healthy level and it's still on the lower side. Maybe it's within range, but less than optimal. And a lot of people would overlook that maybe you're just not breaking down the fats. Maybe you do have something underlying. And with vitamin D, you could easily test, but it's not as easy to test some of the other fat-soluble vitamins. So you might have deficiencies in the others and not know. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Hey, this is Dr. Eric. And if you're looking to do everything you can to save your thyroid, in addition to listening to this podcast, there are a few different ways we can help you. First of all, I've written 3 books on thyroid health, 2 related to hyperthyroidism and 1 related to Hashimoto's. And you can get all of them on Amazon. Or to learn more about them, visit savemythyroid.com/thyroidbooks. Second, you can also join my Graves' disease and Hashimoto's healing community by visiting savemythyroid.com/thyroidgroup. And finally, if you want to get personal help from me, you can visit the website workwithdrerick.com. Just to let you know, I only see a limited number of new patients each month, and I do require anyone interested to complete a brief online application before working with me. And now back to the show.
Yeah. And in terms of tests, there aren't that many exact tests correlate to bile, but we can definitely take a look at our liver tests that everyone has easily accessible through their primary doctor or their annual physical, your AST, your ALT, your bilirubin could be a big indicator, and also GGT and alkaline phosphate. So those are some tests that are available, can really indicate if your liver is being dysfunctional because they are interconnected, to really look into, hey, does your liver need help? And a lot of people with Hashimoto thyroid will suddenly have higher cholesterol too. And I always get that, I'm not eating high cholesterol foods, and why are my LDL going up and overall cholesterol going up? Your thyroid has a direct impact on your liver and the production of cholesterol, and that could be raising your cholesterol levels as well.
Yeah, that is a common finding where you see total cholesterol and LDL elevated. So thanks for explaining that. Estrogen metabolism, you also said that's important. Like having healthy bile metabolism is important for clearing out estrogen. I don't know if you do any dried urine testing, Dutch testing, but like Dutch testing looks at the estrogen metabolites. So if someone, I guess what I'm asking you, if someone has a problem with estrogen metabolism clearing out the estrogens, then if I'm understanding you correctly, it could be related to the bile as well?
In a few months, I will have the capability and the training to do the Dutch test in my practice. I'm always learning in this space. There's always so much to learn. But as we ourselves have a gallbladder, the sphincter of gallbladder, the sphincter of Oddi, if I have my anatomy, has a receptor for thyroid. It also has receptor for your estrogen and progesterone and other sex hormones as well. With estrogen, there are also metabolites which the body needs to get rid of. And if you're recycling that, if bile is not able to clear it, we could see that being an issue as well. And I think that's why women are more prone to gallbladder issues than men comparatively. But I think with the recent estrogen dominance, a lot of men are seeing issues with clearing of the bile and gallbladder issues as well. So there is a correlation with your sex hormones and your bile. So it's all interconnected. Our body is so beautiful. Everything is interconnected, as we are talking about your thyroid, your liver, your gallbladder, your gut. And they're also multifaceted. They just don't perform one function. They perform so many functions. That's the beauty of the body. And that's what fascinates me. And there's so much more to understand of what's going on and to uncover when you're having an issue. What is, and I think that's why working with the right practitioner who can actually help you uncover the root cause and not just look at the tip of the iceberg. Like, for example, okay, you have a gallbladder, let's just get rid of it. But hey, what's going on underneath it? To figure out what needs, because everything is connected. Nothing works in isolation.
Well said. I definitely agree. And also, I should bring up fish oils. So fish oils, a lot of people have issues with fish oils too. They'll get like the burping, and sometimes like taking an enteric-coated fish oil might help. But in most cases, would you say that's also related to problems breaking down fat and potentially bile metabolism issues?
Absolutely, because it is fat like A, D, and K. Now, thank you for bringing it up. Your DHA and your EPA, all those omega-3s are also fats that need bile help to absorb. So that's why we go back to the symptom, right? If you're getting burping, if you have gallbladder issues, you might be experiencing burping as well. It helps with getting rid of hormones. I think a lot of people don't realize the hormones are made of fat as well. So that's why bile is so crucial and critical for even really binding to those hormones so it can excrete it out through the fecal matter, what a body doesn't need.
And then getting back to the testing. So bilirubin, you don't hear people talking too much about bilirubin. If it's elevated, so that also could mean a problem with bile metabolism?
So bilirubin is breakdown of your red blood cells. And if in the liver, if it's elevated, that could indicate now the dysfunction in the liver. So you do need to look at it across all the other tests, your other liver tests that could indicate that could be because our bile also consists of bilirubin as well. So I think that could be one indicator or one sign to look out for, hey, maybe to dig into it a bit deeper of what could be happening.
Yeah, it's also important to mention that for those listening to this who have hyperthyroidism, sometimes you get strange findings with hyperthyroidism, like you might get elevated bilirubin and you might think that there's a problem with the bilirubin, but it could be related to the hyperthyroidism and not bile metabolism. There's also Gilbert's syndrome too, which I'm sure are familiar, which is a genetic. I don't know how much experience you have with Gilbert's. So if someone has an elevated bilirubin with Gilbert's, I imagine you can't permanently get it normal, but you might have to just continuously offer support in that case.
I don't have too much experience with that, so I'll let your expertise speak to it, but yes.
Let me ask you a different question then, which leads into like treatments for gallbladder. So the question I have, which will be after you talk about treatments, is what do you do? Because again, you don't have a gallbladder. But before we dive into that, what would you recommend for someone who, I guess, does have a gallbladder, but wants to save their gallbladder, just like they want to save their thyroid? They don't want to get gallbladder surgery, and they might have some of the symptoms you mentioned earlier. What are some things they could do if they have an existing gallbladder problem, or again, bile metabolism problem, or maybe if they don't and they just want to prevent one?
This is the space that I love doing. So it's never one approach or one thing that's going to solve it all. So I really want to look at it from your diet, your lifestyle, and some targeted supplements that could help. When it comes to diet, just going back, really focusing on a high quality, high fiber fruits and vegetables diet, getting your processed foods out of the diet, because we haven't talked about the gut, but we want that good microbiome and it loves fiber. Again, focusing on healthy fats. The third I would say is support your liver. So really incorporating liver loving foods like liver love bitters. So adding arugula, adding endives. There's an Indian vegetable called bitter gourd. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's available in a lot of Asian markets as well. It is really bitter and we absolutely love it in my house. So adding some bitter vegetables, even grapefruit, artichokes, your cruciferous vegetables, your allium family, which is your onions and garlics, all those vegetables are very supportive for liver. So really adding those to your diet. And along with that, I love herbs and spices. So your turmeric, your cinnamon, your ginger are also very supportive. So incorporating the herbs and spices. And one of the practices that I have incorporated now over the years that it's become a habit is starting your day with hot water and lemon or apple cider vinegar, because it really helps support your liver health for detoxification as well. So those are from the nutrition. And if you're suspecting you have your gallbladder, you have your liver, you want to keep it, and the millions of people are affected, how can we decrease the toxic load that our liver has to process? We know one of the functions of liver is to detoxify as well. Reduce your alcohol intake or eliminate it for some time, because I think our liver cells regenerate every 6 weeks, if I got that. So giving it a break could really help. And shifting into the supplements is dandelion tea, milk thistle tea. They are very supportive for your liver as well. So really incorporating these into your diet. And when from a lifestyle perspective, again, going back, reducing your toxic load. And we are surrounded by toxins in our current 21st century, in our modern life. It's hard to not get exposed to it, but let's control what we can within your house, starting with your water. Having a good filtration system is important. Please don't drink tap water. That's one tip. Your personal care products and your cleaning supplies, cleaning those out slowly as well, because we know they have a ton of chemicals that can be endocrine disruptors and add, again, something your liver has to work through as well. And if you're taking over-the-counter medication and watching how much, because now your liver has to process those too, putting an air purifier. Taking simple measures, taking out plastic and slowly reducing the use of plastics as well can really indirectly help your liver health as well. And exercise is super important. Sweating, skin is our largest organ. It helps us detoxify. So getting exercising, getting 15, 20 minutes of high intensity just to sweat. And if for whatever reason, if somebody's injured or in a later stage in the pregnancy, it's hard to get that high intensity in, leveraging saunas is a great way to sweat. And dry brushing is a simple practice right before you have the right brush before your shower, dry brushing. And one of the latest for me to support my own liver health, because I don't have my gallbladder, is using castor oil packs as well on your liver overnight or just for 20 minutes a day can be very supportive to your liver health. And now when we get into supplements, this is where, since I don't have a gallbladder, I support and depend on getting the bile salts, ox bile and hydrochloric acid. I know this is something we can touch on as well. And to really help support our digestion is, I think, those three. And adding ACV, if you still have your gallbladder and liver, really having some ACV in water before meals to really kickstart the production of the right enzymes so they can really help break down the food. The other one I do is Tatka. Is also very supportive for your live and biliary health. But with any of the supplements, my rule of thumb is start slow and see how it works. Everyone's body is very different. I have a very sensitive, so if I take a bunch, it doesn't really suit me. So I really have to just go slow, wait for a day to see how you feel before you add on. So that's similar with adding fat, leveraging fats in your diet as well. Some people may do okay, because when I was going through the flare, I had to really, the doctor was like, you have to pause, really be watchful about high fats, because you don't want to put more fuel to the fire at that point. So really taking a break at that point, that's exactly, your body might be okay with some healthy fats or not. So you really have to be in tune with your body and aware of how is it working. So those, I would say, are how we can support our liver and gallbladder health. If you have a gallbladder, to save it. And if you don't have one, you really do have to. That's what I do, take bile salts, especially with my high fatty meals and digestive enzymes to help support my health. And I worked on a gut a lot because gut has been so crucial. So, and it's work. It didn't happen overnight, but over the years, really working on my gut and reducing my toxic load and cleaning up everything that's around me that I can control has helped our body, because always wants to work for us. It's never against us. It's our friend. So it's just giving it the right support and figure out the dance. It's a new dance without the gallbladder, but it figures it out.
Since you don't have a gallbladder, you mentioned how you take bile salts regularly. If someone doesn't have an underlying gallbladder or bile metabolism issue, is it at all harmful to take bile salts? Let's say if they're not sure and they just on their own. I know you can't give advice and say just take bile salts, but do you know any harm in taking like ox bile or if someone doesn't have an underlying problem?
So I would say first start with food and herbs. So those are very safe to start with. Just adding ginger in your meals, apple cider vinegar, everyone can benefit from that. So if you don't have a bile metabolism issue, start there first and see how your body does. And if you do want to start with an ox bile salts, again, start slow. Again, work with a practitioner, talk to your doctor, any like outward risk of taking it, but start slow. Take a small quantity to see with your higher fatty meal to see how you do. And if it's not working, you may get diarrhea, loose stool, if it's excessive or bile salt. And that could be an indication that, okay, that it was a little too much and you just need to back down and stop. So that could be one way they could try it out.
Okay, so good to know. So if they're taking bile salts and they don't need it, they might develop some loose stools or some digestive issues. So pretty much listen to your body. If you're taking really anything and you notice any type of side effect, might be a good idea to take a break from that. But just, yeah, I wanted to know what to look out for also. So I'm glad you brought that up. And then surgery. Neither one of us can tell people to get surgery or avoid surgery. Obviously, we both would prefer for people to avoid it whenever possible. And so it's a little bit tricky. Like, again, there might be people who have similar symptoms and they're wondering, is it too late? Can I avoid surgery? And so I don't know what your thoughts are. My thought is I've never given birth. I've never had my gallbladder removed. So I can't, you mentioned earlier how the gallbladder pain was worse than giving birth. So I imagine if you're in that much pain, that probably is a sign that you don't want to just take apple cider vinegar or ox bile. You probably should go to the ER at least. Assuming it's not that extreme, what would you recommend? Would you recommend still maybe getting checked by their doctor, just start getting a CT scan, seeing if there's gallstones?
As Dr. Eric mentioned, work with a medical professional if you're dealing with gallbladder attacks or issues. Yes, ideally we need that organ, right? It was there for a reason. I don't think God or whichever faith you believed in designed us very, it was very thoughtful how everything has its place, even appendix, it's needed for immune system that shouldn't be taken out. So there is a time and place. And if there is extreme pain where it's throwing up and you're having fever and chills, that could be the only option that could save your life, because you don't want your gallbladder bursting inside as well. So maybe in that scenario, it was good. And if it's filled up with stones, maybe there's no going back at that point. Again, really paying attention to your body. And if you can catch it earlier on, going back to if you're feeling right shoulder pain, some pain, indigestion, looking at your basic liver test, if you pick it up early enough, maybe applying some of the supports that we just talked about could help, and working with a practitioner could help with removing the inflammation that could be going on, getting the bile metabolizing early. Or if it's just one, they do an ultrasound, if there is just one stone, not a lot, maybe there could be ways to dissolve those stones earlier on. And number one, I would highly recommend and request, if there is a gallbladder issue that they're facing, to really get your thyroid checked. Because as we talked about, there is a connection between your thyroid and your liver and gallbladder. So if you're facing liver gallbladder issues, get a full thyroid panel, not just your TSH. Get everything. I think previous episodes you've talked about your free T3, T4, reverse T3. Get all of those numbers checked. And vice versa, if you have your thyroid, if you have Hashimoto's or any thyroid even in hyper, take a look at your liver and gallbladder health.
And then you work with people who have gallbladder issues. So if someone is suspecting they have a gallbladder problem, or again, a bile metabolism issue, so if they're not sure, or if they have been diagnosed and they're trying to do everything they can to avoid surgery, again, you can't really tell them to get it or to stop it. They could always consult with you and get your opinion. And if you think it's something you could help with, again, obviously you will.
Depending on where they are and work collaboratively with their doctor, if we can adopt some of the right supplements, nutrition, and diet and lifestyle changes to see how well they are able to implement. And most of my protocols will always have a liver and biliary support, because I think all of us can use some help in that department. So that can definitely be, absolutely, I help people with that.
All right. Divya, this has been wonderful. Is there anything else you wanted to cover? Any final thoughts?
As I said in the beginning, I got into space with my own health journey. I don't wish anyone to go through what I did. And with the rise in gallbladder issues that we are seeing, so if people start paying attention to their liver and gallbladder health, and even their metabolic, if they're dealing with diabetes and, you know, just other issues, to really start, because our body is interconnected and it's working really hard underneath it to keep it in balance. Because by the time people start seeing abnormal blood report, underneath it, it's been dysfunctional for a long time. So start with the basics, start changing your diet, lifestyle. Those had a huge impact on my own health with just making changes there. It takes time and you have to be consistent. I wish there was a magic pill. I wish it was easier, but it just takes time and effort, but the results are worth it, because you want to live on your own terms. You want to live for as long as you live and enjoy the things, travel, whatever your goals and hobbies in life are. So really paying attention to that and really getting more attuned to your body as well. All of us are so disconnected with our body in a stress and keep go culture. We have at somewhere lost our connection with ourselves of what's going on. We don't pay attention to the little nudges our body gives us sometimes. And we don't, it's not until it's okay, you're not listening to me, I'm going to, maybe that's what happened to me, right? My gallbladder was yelling at me by the time, because maybe there were signs it was giving me and I just didn't know to pay attention to those at that point. So yeah, pay attention to your body. It's your friend, not your enemy. And I wish everyone well and get the right support, ask the right question and be your own advocate for your health.
Thank you for that. And where can people learn more about you? If you could share your website, any social media you'd like to share, and I'll definitely include those in the show notes.
No, absolutely. So people can find me on my website, divyagupta.net. It's a very common name, so .com was taken. So divyagupta.net. And I have a very helpful guide in there available on a comprehensive symptoms for Hashimoto's and a comprehensive lab with the description, because with Hashimoto's or subclinical, it manifests differently for different people. My symptoms may look different from yours. So I really have a good list in there and all the labs that they would want to run and advocate. So they can grab that from my website. And I'm on Instagram as well, @_divgupta. is where I spend time. So those are the two places people can find me.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you so much. This was a wonderful conversation as far as gallbladder health, liver health, biometabolism. Again, you covered a lot. I'm sure your listeners learned a lot of things. I learned some things too. And it was really a pleasure chatting with you.
Same here, Dr. Eric. Again, thank you so much for what you do. You have amazing episodes. I'm always learning. I'm learning as well from you because Graves and hypothyroidism is a space that I'm interested in. It's been more on the Hashimoto. So thank you for putting out such great interviews, bringing on great experts on your show that we can all learn and benefit from. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You're welcome. And thank you. Thanks for those kind words. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Save My Thyroid podcast. If you haven't done so already, make sure you hit subscribe to stay up to date on the latest thyroid health-related topics. And to get your free thyroid and immune health restoration action points checklist, visit SaveMyThyroidChecklist.com. Thanks so much for tuning in.
So that was a great interview with Thevia as we spoke about different aspects related to gallbladder health. And we spoke about bilirubin. So bilirubin is from the breakdown of red blood cells. And you could look at it on a comprehensive metabolic panel. The reference range, ideally, you want it to be less than one. I mean, usually when it's like, even I think one might be acceptable, like within the lab reference range, like it might not be until it's like 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. But arguably, the lower the better with bilirubin. And I will say that if someone is dealing with hyperthyroidism, including Graves' disease or toxic multinodular goiter, subacute thyroiditis, then it might be elevated. So you might see it elevated because of the hyperthyroidism. It doesn't mean that there's a problem with bile syndrome or Gilbert syndrome. And so just something to keep in mind. If you have an elevation, you might want to look and see if you had that tested in the past, which if you had a physical, you probably did. Usually when they do a physical, they'll do some basic blood tests and a comprehensive metabolic panel is part of a basic blood test. So if your bilirubin was always on the higher end, then maybe you're dealing with something like Gilbert syndrome, which is more genetic. And so let's talk a little bit about Gilbert syndrome, because again, I briefly mentioned it and didn't really get into detail with it during our conversation. But I remember when I was going through my training for the Institute for Functional Medicine, this was, I believe, either 2014 or it might have been 2015. It was in Denver, Colorado, and Dr. Robert Roundtree was talking about Gilbert syndrome, which might have been the first time I heard of it. So I'm not sure, but I know he was mentioning that most sources say that it's harmless and it's not a problem, but he was disputing that and showing some research that was showing that it could be a problem. And then, so I did a quick search. And if you look, certain descriptions, like the Mayo Clinic website says that Gilbert syndrome is a common harmless liver condition in which the liver doesn't properly process bilirubin. And again, that's what Dr. Roundtree was saying, that it's not harmless. And, you know, as far as prevalence, the prevalence rate is between 4 and 16%. So it's even 4% is pretty common, but 16%, I mean, that's almost like one out of six people. And then those with Gilbert syndrome have an increased incidence of jaundice as well as gallstones. And, you know, I mean, if you have gallstones, that you have a greater risk of having gallbladder surgery. It doesn't mean that you will if you have gallstones, but again, greater risk. So you can't conclude that Gilbert's is harmless. It doesn't mean that you should stress out, but you can and probably should do things to help improve bile metabolism. Follow some of the advice given during this interview here. But really, most gallbladder problems are really bile metabolism problems, is essentially what the discussion was here. And so you want to do things to improve the metabolism of the bile. I mean, supporting liver is important, and bitter herbs also could help too. Different bitters, like bitter herbs and bitter vegetables. But if you have problems with bile metabolism, that's going to affect your ability to break down fats. And so she mentioned fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin D, vitamin A, vitamin K, vitamin E. So you might be deficient in those. And so you might get into vitamin D, since that's what's commonly tested, doing like a 25-hydroxy vitamin D. If you see that consistently low, maybe you need to supplement with vitamin D, but it is possible you have a bile metabolism problem. And that's especially true if you have some problems with fish oil supplements, which is actually a question on one of my questionnaires. I have a metabolic assessment and asked, do you have like a lot of burping when taking fish oils? And if someone says yes, that also could be a sign that they have problems with bile metabolism, especially if they put down that they have a history, like problems with fish oil supplements, and they also have had gallstones. I mean, if they have a history of gallstones, even without the fish oil supplement problem, then you could say, yeah, they probably have a bile metabolism problem. So when it comes to preventing gallbladder surgery, I mean, detoxifying is important, like supporting liver, but usually you need to do more than that. You want to eat healthy. Yes, but really the bile metabolism, which estrogen metabolism, there's definitely a role between estrogen metabolism and bile metabolism. And, you know, you could do certain tests besides like looking at the bilirubin. You could do a Dutch test and look at the estrogen metabolites. And if you have, you know, high estrogen metabolites, especially like 4-hydroxy, like the 2-hydroxy is an estrogen metabolite that should be high. But if your 4-hydroxy or 16-hydroxy estrogen metabolites are high, then you want to do things to correct that. And that possibly could lead to a bile metabolism problem and gallstones in the future if you don't, let alone other more scary health issues. Like, you know, if you have a predisposition for like breast cancer or other estrogen dependent cancers, that could be an issue. So definitely something I want to bring up. But yeah, and then also things like oral contraceptives, which years ago, when I thought about oral contraceptives, I was looking more about them causing nutrient deficiencies. And I knew they also like disrupted the endocrine system, but I really didn't think about them being a factor with gallstones and eventually people getting gallbladder surgery. And, you know, I wish I had that knowledge years ago, but I'm bringing it up now because, again, if not to say there's not a time and place for oral contraceptives, but you just need to be aware that if you're on that and if you're developing gallstones, many doctors would just not even look at the oral contraceptives as being a factor. They'll just remove the gallbladder, you know, or you'll just be in a situation where that would be the only choice you have, depending on how long you've been dealing with it. But yeah, so something to bring in mind if you or someone you know is having gallbladder issues, definitely make sure that if they are taking oral contraceptives, they're at least aware of the potential risks. And that was pretty much all I want to chat about it here. Just again, a very good conversation. And, you know, as usual, hope you found the episode to be valuable and look forward to catching you in the next one. I want to let you know about a product called Hepatoimmune Supreme, which is a unique supplement that has a rare combination of N-acetylcysteine, also known as NAC, milk thistle, and schisandra to support the liver. And it also has a few mushrooms that can help support the immune system, including cordyceps, which has both immune modulating and adaptogenic properties and is great for those with Graves' disease and Hashimoto's. To learn more about Hepatoimmune Supreme, visit savemythyroid.com/liver support.